Bum 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 bum. Welcome to another snack. Did you like that?
No.
Sat through 6.5 hours of Angels in America.
Seven? More, because the first part is 3.5 hours.
Uh-huh.
The second part is 4.5 hours.
So 8 hours.
Yeah.
8 hours of the National Theater live broadcast of Angels in America. Directed by...
Marianne Elliott.
Starring...
Susan Brown as Hannah Pitt. Andrew Garfield as Prior Walter. Denise Gogue as Harper Pitt. Nathan Lane as Roy Cohn, Amanda Lawrence as the Angel, James McArdle as Lewis Ironson, Nathan Stewart James as Belize, and Russell Tovey as Joe Pitt. First, let's start with what Andrew Garfield said.
Yes.
So, most people already know this, but for those who don't, Andrew Garfield did an interview about Angels in America where he said that he, on Sunday nights, would just go home and watch RuPaul's Drag Race with his friends, and he referred to himself as a gay man without the physical act.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair to him, if he was coming out as asexual and gay, there's nothing wrong with what he said, because plenty of people are gay without the act of gay sex, you know? Yeah. I mean, currently, you and I are both gay without the act of gay sex. So if he was saying that he identifies as gay, he just doesn't have sex with men, there would be nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing wrong with asexuality.
Nothing at all.
However, what he then went on to say was, but I'm not gay.
Yeah. Which is where I had my problem, because when I saw, like, the announcement that he had said that, I was like, oh my god, he's gay. He just hasn't had sex yet.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Or
I was like,
he's asexual.
Wow, he's asexual. Like, that's amazing.
I can't wait
I love
to be
this
the first guy that fucks Andrew Garfield.
Okay.
And then when he came out and he was like, oh, well, but no, like, I'm not coming out. This isn't, yeah. That's not what I was saying. I was like,
Yeah. And so, like, for me, the big problem with it was just conflating being gay with drag and watching RuPaul's Drag Race.
Well, then he came out and said this, and I'm going to have you
stop saying
it.
He came out. So then he said, that's of course not what I meant at all. That discussion was about this play and how deeply grateful I am that I get to work on something so profound. It's a love letter to the LGBTQ community. We were talking about how do you prepare for something so important and so big, and I was basically saying I dive in as fully as I possibly can. My only longing is to serve and to keep the world spinning forward for the LGBTQ community in whatever way I'm meant to. It's important to a community that I feel so welcomed by. The intention of my comments was to speak to that, speak to my desire to play this part to the best of my ability and to fully immerse myself in a culture that I adore.
To that, I say, oh, great. That doesn't equal what you said.
Yeah. Because if you're gonna, like, fully immerse yourself in gay culture with, like, heavy air quotes around that.
Yeah.
RuPaul's Drag Race is not the way to do it.
Yeah.
Like, if he was like, I went home and every week I watched Paris is Burning.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like, watched How to Survive a Plague.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like, read all these things and I, like, went and saw The Normal Heart. Like, then I would be like, okay, yeah, you're, like, immersing yourself in not only gay culture, but the, like, specific subculture you are dealing with in this play of, like, HIV-positive gay men.
Which any and every actor will do.
Yeah, but especially to be starring in a play like Angels in America and be like, yes, the way I prepared is I watched RuPaul's Drag Race. There's just, like, there's no equivalency there.
Yeah, and then wasn't there a video that came out of him, like, in a wig?
Yeah.
Dancing?
Yeah, there was a video of him, like, dancing in drag.
And here's a question that I had that I was talking to a friend about is, like, okay, so he was like, I'm a gay man because I liked RuPaul's Drag Race and that will get me into character enough to play Prior Walter. Question is, then when we were watching it, there were a couple times where they're like, oh, when we gave up drag?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, wait, what? How was that what you did then?
Exactly. If he was in kinky boots, maybe. If he was playing that role, I would be like, yeah, totally, drag's a big part of that. And, like, yes, drag is a part of Pryor's past.
Yes.
But also, like, watching RuPaul's Drag Race does not teach you what it was like to be a drag queen in the 80s.
Especially season 9. I mean...
Sure. So it's just, it's not the same. And there's, for me, a big problem with it was, like, there's no understanding of the history.
Yeah.
of, like, drag in the 70s and 80s, which is when Pryor would have been doing drag, is just a completely different thing from RuPaul's Drag Race.
It's a different style of drag. I mean, yeah. Even if you watch RuPaul's Drag Race from season 1 to season 9, you can literally watch drag culture change.
Yeah.
I think that drag culture, at least in New York, which is the only drag culture that I'm really exposed to, has changed because of RuPaul's Drag Race. And there is a large population of drag queens that don't like what has happened since RuPaul's Drag Race. And then
which is something we'll be talking about on season 2.
Yeah. So I'm like, that literally has nothing to do with what you're doing.
You clearly, your research is like 2017 drag, which is not what the play is about.
Yeah.
I mean, just to sort of transition into our review of the show, it, to me at least, was very clear that that was the research he did. Because I read him as like a campy modern queen. Yeah. Which is like not what Pryor is. Pryor is like campy, but he's campy for the year the play takes place.
Yes. I will say right now, before we dive into the review of the show, is that this was the first, like, production of it that I've ever seen. I've read Millennium Approaches in school, and then I've seen the miniseries, and mm-hmm. that's about as far as I go with Angels in America. But even just looking at, what's his name?
Justin Kirk.
Yeah, even looking at Justin Kirk's performance in the miniseries, it is nowhere near the camp level.
Yeah.
That he did on stage. So here's my thing about Justin Kirk's performance in the HBO miniseries. He plays a gay man, and he never explicitly is like, I am a flamboyant, campy gay guy.
Yeah.
Which is what I got from Andrew.
Yeah. Which also, production. There is no problem with, and which is a valid reading of the character.
Yeah.
But I read it as
a caricature of what Andrew
a caricature, and also based in, like, 2017 camp.
Yeah. There were a lot of, like, little things that he did for humor where I was like, I mean, okay, but that's not what anybody else is doing right now.
Basically, I mean, I thought Andrew Garfield was not great.
There were moments in the show where I was like, oh, I forgot that he's, like, a good actor.
Yeah.
And that, like, I do like his work, and I'm a fan of Andrew Garfield. But then there were other moments where I was like, oh. And it never hit harder until the very end when he came out and they were all at Bethesda Fountain. And he has his whole speech because he completely dropped everything that he was doing to play Pryor. And he was trying to play, I guess, that he's just healthier and, like, calmer, and he's kind of, like, found whatever Pryor finds. Yeah. And they, like, just put really hot glasses on him and he, like, walked out. And I was like, are you saying that, like, because you're more mature, you're now less gay? His whole, like, the blessing at the very end of the show when he's like, we will, and he keeps saying we and, like, the community and stuff like that. There was a complete detachment I got from it where I was like, why are you telling me this?
Yeah.
It just, like, made me uncomfortable is the wrong word because I wasn't, but just, like, it was weird to watch.
Yeah. So moving past that, what did you think of the production?
As someone who's never seen a production of it, I feel like I like the play more. Seeing it not, like, as a miniseries, there were a lot of things about the production as a whole that I didn't understand, especially, like, concept and design-wise, and I feel like it just, those are the things that I didn't like.
A big problem that I had with it was, it felt very clear to me that it was directed by, and performed in many cases by, straight people.
Yes.
Because there's such a, like, I think we're sort of living in a world where it's, like, gay people are the same as straight people. Like, straight people really want to affirm that, like, gay people are exactly the same as straight people. And, like, queer people in general, exactly the same as straight people. When, mm-hmm. like, that's actually not true. And there's such a, like,
that, like, that's not what equality means.
Yeah. And there's such a sort of complexity and, like, messiness to queer relationships that there isn't to straight relationships.
Yeah.
Which I think is something really important about the Joe and Harper relationship, is that there is that complexity there in a straight relationship that you wouldn't expect to be there.
Yeah.
And that was something that I didn't ever really get from this production.
You I know, did get it, but not until he goes back to her in Perestroika.
Well, I meant about, like, all the relationships. I didn't get it.
Oh, gotcha.
My whole thing about Angels in America that I find so beautiful and interesting is that it's about, like, trying to make two things coexist, two different worlds coexist.
Yeah.
You know, literally with Pryor and the world of heaven and the world of earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then also with the world of sickness and the world of health.
Yeah.
Like, for all of them.
Yeah. Pryor and Lewis's relationship is my favorite relationship in the show.
Well, that's great because it's the main one.
Yep. It's that one and Joe and Roy's relationship.
Yeah. Well, that's another trying to make two things coexist in a way that they cannot. Like heterosexuality and homosexuality trying to coexist in one person without obviously the acknowledgement of bisexuality. It's all about conflict existing because of two different worlds trying to be one world in ways that they can't. And I never got any sense of that from this production. Mm-hmm. Even the two worlds of heaven and earth, there was never any sort of like messiness. When Andrew went from heaven back to earth, it was like the most beautiful moment of the production.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like there was no acknowledgement of like there are these two things sort of like pressing at each other and the seams are gonna rip. And it was just sort of like a very seamless thing of like he was in heaven and now he's in earth, and there's no acknowledgement of the fact that that's sort of like a really horrible thing to go from one world into another.
One of my favorite things about the miniseries was when you watch it, it's a long play.
Yeah.
And the miniseries is the play. The reason I finished it so quickly was because I was like, there's so much conflict that it literally takes this much time to relatively resolve.
Well, that's the thing is, but Tony Kushner has said, like, he wanted to make it 3 hours, but then he was like, nope, can't even be one play.
When we were watching the broadcast, there were a lot of times where I was like, I just watched this scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm getting nothing else besides what you've been telling me for the past couple of hours.
And the whole thing is, like, you want, in each relationship, even the ones that are not romantic and even the ones that aren't central, like, with Harper and Pryor, or, like, with Harper and Hannah, even.
Yeah.
Or Hannah and Pryor. Like, all of the relationships that aren't, like, central to the, like, quote-unquote main story. Mm-hmm. Every single relationship, you're supposed to desperately want them to be together and also desperately want them to not be together for any number of reasons. And for this, it was, like, I always knew what I wanted. I knew that I wanted Harper and Joe to not be together.
Yep.
I never was, like... Like, I feel like with Mary Louise Parker and Patrick Wilson, or with Deborah Messing in the workshop...
You actually said this after... Yeah. You said this after we saw Millennium Approaches, because you were like, it started and you knew Joe and Lewis were like that Lewis and Andrew Garfield were not going to be together and that they were meant to be together.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't, because I felt the same thing, but I didn't know if it was like just the mindset that the actors were in or if that's how it was cast. Like,
yeah, like the first scene with Lewis and Joe in the bathroom.
I was like,
in this production, was like a meet cute in a rom-com as opposed to often when it's like, no, Lewis, you have this guy at home. And like, no, Joe, you have this wife who's like horribly sick. You need to get back to her. But also like, oh, you're so good together. And for this, it was like, oh, great. They're going to be together. Awesome.
And that's kind of what made me go, okay, now I have to sit through the next 3 hours to get to the rest of the conflict.
Yeah.
I had a different experience because part of me was like, I'm really excited to see this like as a production.
Yeah.
And then the other part of me was like, but I wish it was like as good as what I saw in the miniseries.
Yeah.
Nathan Lane.
Nathan fucking Lane. Nathan Lane is one of the greatest actors of all time.
Yeah. I don't think that I'm wrong in saying the past couple of roles that he's played has been Nathan Lane.
Yeah.
Which is not bad because...
Yeah, because he's still
average
incredible.
Nathan Lane is still amazing.
Yeah.
So going into this, I was like, okay, it's Nathan Lane. And then after Act One, we were like, it's Nathan Lane doing...
doing Nathan Lane as Roy Cohn, which is like interesting, and which, by the way, was the only example of what I was just talking about like two things coexisting, the sort of like foppishness of Nathan Lane with the like really like heterosexual intensity of Roy Cohn, which I thought in his first scene was really an interesting internal conflict to be watching, but still was like, I'm just watching Nathan Lane.
Yeah, his whole first scene with the telephone, I was like, oh my god, this is so funny, but it's just Nathan Lane.
Yeah.
How on earth is he gonna do the rest of this role? And then by the end of Act Two, we were both like, all right, Nathan Lane's amazing. And
by the end of Part Two, both of us were like losing our fucking minds. And we're like, Nathan Lane.
I didn't know he could do that.
Like, Nathan fucking Lane. And I hope he wins an Olivier for this.
Oh, 100%.
Because it's
he
one
is
of the
best person on that
astounding
stage.
Astounding performances.
Yeah.
And also the journey he goes on is unlike any journey that any other character goes on in that production.
Yes. I mean, in Perestroika alone.
Yeah.
Because I feel like through the first part, his journey's kind of slow because he's not really the focus. As soon as he starts coming on later with his sickness, I was suddenly like, oh, I'm here for Nathan Lane. Oh, God, he was so good.
Yeah.
Oh, one thing related to the podcast is let's rewind to our teaser where
I'm going to lie down while you do this.
Where I say Russell Tovey's ears are cute, and I would just like to report everybody that Russell Tovey's butt is also cute.
Let me know when you're
But gone. Let's just... really quickly talk about the nudity, because I thought that that was interesting and can also tie back to Andrew Garfield.
So the weird thing about this production is that there was no nudity.
Yeah.
The nudist that anyone got
was Russell's butt.
Was Russell's butt.
And there are how many nude points? There's Andrew getting the checkup.
Prior getting the checkup, yeah.
Andrew getting the checkup.
Prior getting the checkup.
There's, Harper saying, look at me.
Yeah, and then Joe taking off his skin.
Yeah.
And, you know, various productions have, like, various other moments. I have seen productions where, like, Lewis and Prior are naked in the bedroom scene. Like, things like that.
Yeah.
There's just sort of, like, nudity sprinkled throughout it. But in this, there was nothing, and it was, like, most weird and awkward during the scene where Pryor's at the doctor getting examined, because in the scene where he usually, like, strips naked and she, like, checks his penis, she, like, pulled back his underwear and, like, peeked in and was like, ooh, and then, like, closed it in a beard that was in a way that was, like, so bizarre. And you and I were both like, what's happening?
Upset,
and also the scene
because,
where Harper
you know,
was like, look at me, and she usually, like, takes off her towel and she's, like, full frontal naked. Then
Mary
it's
Louise
like,
Parker doing that scene was one of my favorite parts in the miniseries. And then when she didn't drop the towel, I was like, I had the same feeling as I did when Russell just showed his butt, where I was like, well, then you're not doing the scene.
Yeah, because and that's this like is not what that scene
like,
means.
And when she's like, I'm giving you everything.
When she's like, look at me, and she's being like, are you attracted to me? And it's like, here I am wrapped in a towel. Are you attracted to me? And it's like, no, because you're not.
I mean,
naked.
You were probably like, I mean, yeah. But still.
Who also, by the way, incredible performance from her. She
I need
so
to see everything
good.
She's ever in.
She and Nathan Lane, for me, were the two standouts. Also Belize and Lewis. So all
so everybody except for Lewis's scene with Belize on the park bench.
Oh my god, there is a running gag that he does.
That was so
in
good.
The, like, Democracy in America speech that had me literally crying. I was laughing so hard.
For the entire 8 hours, I was never as engaged as I was during that one scene.
I agree.
Who is the audience for this revival?
Straight people.
Thank you. I mean, there was a good population of people that were like, you know, my gaydar was going off and I was like, okay, great. There are a lot of gays here. But like, I'd say a large portion of the audience was
straight. For
yeah.
Sure.
And older.
Which also, to be fair, we saw the broadcast at Skirball. And the audience for that is always like old straight whites.
Yeah.
But
even when they were doing the live streaming, they were showing the audience in London. It was, I mean, at least the people that they were showing or that you could see were like with a date who was their girlfriend.
Yeah.
Or they were like a married couple or
which
like
I think
an
goes
older
back
couple.
To what I was saying about, I think the main problem with this revival was that it tried really hard to be like, Angels in America is for everyone.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it's not.
Well, like, do
stop
you remember,
making it like that.
Remember when Ryan Murphy did The Normal Heart and he was
how
like,
how could I forget?
And he, but the thing that I liked about it is he was like, I think, like, today's generation is not afraid of AIDS in the way that they should be.
I agree.
So I'm doing it to, like, put this back into everybody's heads. I think that this production was just, like, missing that completely.
Yeah.
They were doing a production of Angels in America because everyone loves Angels in America.
Yeah.
And everyone loves Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
And it showed. So my thing is, like, if it does transfer, like, who's gonna see it?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll probably see it because I want to see it live. Sitting through it again will be a different thing. But, like, yeah, I'll probably see it. The gay population will see it in the first 2 months of its run.
And then
like, what is it there for?
Tourists who are like, Angels in America, that's a famous play.
It does nothing for the play, and it does nothing for theater.
It doesn't teach me anything I didn't already know about Angels in America, which is my, like, gold standard for revivals. Is like, does this teach me something I didn't already know about this play? And this production of Angels in America doesn't, except for Lewis and
Nathan Lane. And Harper. I told you this before that, like, I only liked Harper in the miniseries because it was Mary Louise Parker.
Yeah.
And then this, I, like, loved Harper.
Yeah.
So, like, those three performances are definitely worth sitting through the 8 hours for.
So, to wrap this up, here's what I would say is, when it becomes available online, download it and skip through it, because I think that's a good way to figure out what you want. And also, like, watch Nathan Lane's performance.
I can't watch stuff like that. I have to, like, watch the whole thing. So, like, if you want to watch it. Just, like, keep all this in mind.
Thank you for listening to our snack. If you liked this, you can do a couple of things. Number one, subscribe to us on iTunes.
Leave us a review. give us a couple stars.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram.
At One More Thing, because I was taken.
Like us on Facebook, One More Thing Podcast.
Yep. Where we did our Leah Michelle
live stream.
And if you haven't watched it, go watch it. Share it with your friends.
Subscribe to our newsletter, tinyletter.com/onemorething.
Yes.
Email us, onemorethingpodcast@gmail.com.
With number one.
And finally, if you really want to support us, if you want to hear an extra episode every month, and
even when we're not doing stuff.
Even when we're not releasing episodes regularly, and if you want video content from us every month, like the Leah Michelle live stream.
And if you want merch.
Yeah.
And if you want nudes.
You can go to patreon.com/onemorething.
Spell Patreon, because...
Patreon. Yeah. .com/onemorething and give us some money.
That money will be used for the podcast. Yes. We want some new equipment. We want to bring you like the biggest and best season 2 that we possibly can.
We're gearing up for season 2 and we want to make it better. And as we know, better means more expensive.
And there's only so much that we can afford. I guess we'll see you in 2 weeks for our next snack. Do you know what we should do for next week?
What?
We should eat a snack, and then they can eat a snack, and we can all snack while snacking.
That's true. In 2 weeks, when we release our next snack...
Grab a snack.
Grab a snack and listen. We'll remind you at the beginning of that one.
Yeah. All right.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
I was just going to ask, what is your favorite snack?
Organic Tostitos.
That's good. That's good.
Or, and then sometimes I like a gluten-free bagel, and then I toast it, and then I put peanut butter on it.
Uh-huh.
That's a good snack, because gluten-free bagels are very small.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I like Cheetos.
Mm-hmm.